The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We have so much to get to on today's broadcast, so much to cover here on the last show of the week. Where has the week gone? We're already to Friday, the middle of September. Well, on today's program, I want to go through a story, another great piece by Victor Davis Hanson about the demonization of Devin Nunes, the one that's heading up that that investigation into the deep state and all that has been happening over the past couple of years. We've talked a fair bit about it, at least some of Nunes's work. We had that story back in April that my father wrote as well on what the Nunes memo reveals. And that together with some other things that we've said over the years about exposure and just how much the devil hates to be exposed. And you really see his fingerprints on a lot of things happening in the United States, because those individuals that the devil is using effectively, they don't want to be exposed for the evil that they're carrying on with. And so we'll talk a little bit more about that later on in the show as well. But first, of course, the news that is happening at the moment, Hurricane Florence finally making landfall. And I'm sure that that will dominate the news cycle today, or at least it should, you would think, at least in the United States. But the lead up to it, as we'll talk about here in just a moment, more craziness produced by the mainstream media on a daily basis. But going back to the news happening right now, evidently 300,000 homes, I guess, are without power, and there's 150 people stranded in a storm surge. I think that's in New Bern. I don't know if that's North Carolina or South, but there have been reports of a 10-foot storm surge and something like 12,000 people that are right now in 126 evacuation shelters. This report here from Associated Press, it says Hurricane Florence was making a marathon landfall in North Carolina early Friday, pushing a life-threatening storm surge of floodwater miles inland and ripping apart buildings with screaming wind and pelting rain. It says more than 60 people had to be pulled from a collapsing motel at the height of the storm, and many more who defied evacuation orders were hoping to be rescued. It says pieces of buildings ripped apart by the storm flew through the air. And then finally, the AP says here, most ominously, forecasters said the terrifying onslaught would last for hours and hours because Florence was barely creeping along and still drawing energy from the ocean. And so, I mean, the reports over the last couple of days was that it was losing some of its intensity, but also that it was just moving so slow. And so now, as it just kind of grinds to a halt, making a landfall here this morning, you can expect, I think, similar to what we saw around Houston. Well, I mean, we don't know exactly what it's going to end up being like, but when that storm just stalled and hovered over Houston and dumped all of that water on South Texas, you wonder if that's what if that's what's coming in North Carolina or South Carolina or both. I'm sure we'll have a clearer picture of what has happened and what might happen on Monday's program. And in any event, it looks like there's going to be some catastrophic flooding throughout the region, even if the winds did die down just a little bit. As we know from previous hurricanes, Katrina is another one that comes to mind. A lot of times, the devastating impact of these kinds of storms, you don't really see it fully until a few days or maybe even a few weeks later. Well, and speaking of storms, of course, the big story yesterday was not this hurricane, but rather the hurricane that hit Puerto Rico a year ago. And in the lead up to this one, of course, there were all of these charges aimed at the president of the United States that it was his fault. He was in office, what, 9 months, I guess, before those two hurricanes went through Puerto Rico. And of course, they've been led by left-wing progressive governments for many, many years. And the infrastructure was falling apart. You can see why those storms were so devastating there and not as much in other areas where the infrastructure is stronger. But people on major news media outlets blaming President Trump, saying that he was, well, that racism even had a factor in this, that he doesn't like brown people, and so he didn't rush to their defense. This was just a year ago. People so quickly forget how many resources the federal government sent down there. Of course, the president himself went down there, I think, a couple of weeks after the storm. But the tweet that he sends out yesterday, this is what set them into a mad dog frenzy. He said yesterday, 3,000 people did not die in the two hurricanes that hit Puerto Rico. When I left the island after the storm had hit, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths. As time went by, it did not go up by much. Then, a long time later, they started to report really large numbers, like 3,000. This was done by the Democrats in order to make me look as bad as possible when I was successfully raising billions of dollars to help rebuild Puerto Rico. If a person died for any reason, he said, like old age, just add them onto the list. Bad politics, President Trump tweeted. I love Puerto Rico. So that's the full tweet, or two of them, I guess, when you put the statement together. And if you just break down the statement, of course, everyone came forward right away from the right and the left saying he was a liar. It's another conspiracy theory. But if you go back to what was said at the press conference 2 weeks after the hurricane, and then what was reported generally for many, many months, 10 or 11 months after the hurricane. Let's go back first to what President Trump said in early October of last year. This was 2 weeks after those two hurricanes ravaged Puerto Rico, clip one.
Every death is a horror, but if you look at a real catastrophe like Katrina, and you look at the tremendous hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people that died, and you look at what happened here with really a storm that was just totally overpowering. Nobody's ever seen anything like this. What is your death count as of this moment?
17? 16?
16 people certified. 16 people versus in the thousands. You can be very proud, all of your people, all of our people working together. 16 versus literally thousands of people.
That's President Trump sitting alongside, I forgot to look into this, but it's either the governor or the lieutenant governor sitting alongside him at a press conference 2 weeks after the hurricane to sweep through Puerto Rico. And this was the Puerto Rican official who said that there had been 16 confirmed deaths. So when you break down President Trump's statement yesterday, firstly, he said 3,000 people did not die in those two hurricanes. He said, when I left the island, after the storm had hit, they had anywhere from 6 to 18 deaths, which is true. That was the confirmed number, as you just heard. Now, all of the press coverage today, the New York Times, we'll just take this as one example. As a new hurricane roars in, Trump quarrels over the last one. Well, in fact, it was the major media. They're the ones who started this quarrel, blaming the last one on him and this one on him as well, even before it made landfall this morning. The Washington Post, remember, said that he's complicit. He's complicit in Hurricane Florence, and Florence hadn't even hit yet. He's complicit because he hasn't done enough to combat climate change. That's the Washington Post from earlier this week. Now, here's the New York Times from today. pointing out just how much of a fool he is to call into question 3,000 fatalities. The Times says fatalities were officially recorded as 64 for nearly a year. For nearly a year. Now, go back to his tweet. He said, when I left, the report was 6 to 18, and it didn't go up very much. For many, many months after that, which the New York Times is confirming. For nearly a year, it was that way. Despite, this is the Times, it's editorializing here, despite convincing evidence that the figure was too low because death certificates had failed to take into account the long-range impact of the storm. So that's what we're talking about now when we revise the statistics a full year later. I mean, this is something we haven't quite seen before. Going in and analyzing a national disaster, a national tragedy, a full year later. You didn't see that under the Obama administration. The Times says here in August, so here's the way the number was, the number went up from 64 to nearly 3,000. In August, a review by researchers from George Washington University at the request of the Puerto Rican government, I guess the Puerto Rican government can't get a hold of these statistics in Puerto Rico, so they request that a study be done by George Washington University. A study that compared death rates during the storm and its aftermath to normal rates and concluded, this is what the study concluded, that 2,975 more people died than would have otherwise. The Times says here, while this was a scientific extrapolation, rather than a list of specific names with specific causes, the Puerto Rican government accepted the estimate, as did lawmakers from both parties. So this was not a long list of people who died in the hurricane or even in the immediate aftermath. This was scientific extrapolation. And the president of the United States called it into question yesterday. And predictably, well, you saw the response if you tuned into anything in the United States anyway. He said, this isn't true. For 11 months, it was 64, the New York Times said. And then last month, it was 2,975. Based on a George Washington University study that compared death rates. I can't imagine how difficult something like that must be. It seems like with Google these days, you could do that in about 20 minutes. Just locate the death rates for Puerto Rico from year to year. This is what they concluded. And, well, the Times says the Puerto Rican government agreed with them. And so did lawmakers. And so we all should agree with them then. This scientific extrapolation. Yesterday on CNN, there was a report by John Avalon. And he was talking about climate change, pointing out in this report. This is hard news on CNN. It's in a segment called Reality Check. This is reality. And here he is talking about President Trump and what he thinks or believes about climate change. Clip two.
But while President Trump has been talking up our preparedness, his policies have been tearing down our defenses to climate change, which is often blamed for extreme weather.
So that's the premise then. Climate change, which is often to blame for extreme weather. So he talks, the president does, he talks about preparedness, but his policies, they're tearing down our defenses. They're making us more vulnerable. He went on to say this in the same report, clip three.
On the very same day Trump was discussing Florence from the Oval Office, his EPA proposed rolling back restrictions on emissions of methane.
So how about this? The same day he's talking about a hurricane, his EPA is proposing rolling back restrictions on emissions of methane. They're tearing down America's defenses against climate change. This is clip four.
According to a July study from the New York Times, nearly 80 regulations could be on their way out. They include everything from no longer requiring chemical companies to report leaks to cutting cars and trucks' fuel efficiency, pulling the U.S. out of the Paris Climate Accords, dismantling the Clean Power Plan, and opening nearly all our coastline to offshore drilling. It's so bad that according to two Harvard scientists, Trump's environmental policies could lead to an additional 80,000 unnecessary deaths every decade.
80,000 deaths because of Donald Trump in the next 10 years. This is more what I guess you would call scientific extrapolation, to use the term the New York Times used. It's a guesstimate. A guesstimate as to, and two Harvard scientists, they're the ones that concluded this. They went to Harvard. They've conducted a study. They've looked at these policies. They've extrapolated it on out and have concluded that 80,000 people are going to die in the next 10 years thanks to Donald Trump. This is what qualifies as trustworthy, reliable reporting today. If Donald Trump calls into question a George Washington University study, this is a scandal of the highest order. If on the same day CNN says that Donald Trump is the cause of 80,000 deaths over the next 10 years, well, that's just garden variety reporting, I guess. Straightforward, reputable, factual, candid, above board, trustworthy. You can trust CNN. It makes me think of this verse in 1 Timothy 6, where Paul said to Timothy, keep that which is committed to your trust, avoiding profane and vain babblings and oppositions of science falsely so-called, which some professing have erred concerning the faith. Just avoid that sort of thing. Science falsely so-called. I mean, how many reporters or researchers or scientists could come forward with pretty much any kind of study and extrapolate it on out based upon their opinion and basically tell you anything that you want to hear? You look at the whole educational system, as Herbert Armstrong used to say. I mean, the whole premise there, it's based on evolution. It's based on the rejection of the plain truth as revealed in the Holy Bible. And then they just come out and say, well, science proves it. Science proves climate change. Science proves that it was not 64, it was 2975, actually. Science has proven that President Trump, who's been in office for a year and a half, he is responsible for 80,000 deaths over the next 10 years. We already know it. Science has weighed in. This is the last bit from that CNN report yesterday. This is clip 5.
This isn't rocket science, folks. It's climate science. And as long as we continue to aggressively ignore it, the cost in lives and dollars will only escalate. And that's your reality check.
That's the reality check from CNN. All of these reports yesterday, not just on TV, but the written ones as well, just dripping with sanctimony. And you notice in all of this, I quoted the New York Times, and you listen to that CNN report, he cites the New York Times, he points to the two Harvard scholars. Of course, the whole estimate on the Puerto Rican deaths, that's from George Washington University. The Washington Post says Trump is complicit. He's complicit in this storm for failing to address climate change. And those kinds of statements, they've been made all through this week. No one bats an eye. No one rises to challenge them, except one individual. But no one rises to challenge them. We're just supposed to accept it. President Trump sends out one tweet calling into question scientific extrapolation of the highest order. And, well, he's the one who's made to be crazy. You know, Jake Tapper, yesterday, he's also on CNN. He said that this is President Trump's latest conspiracy theory. Yet another conspiracy theory, just like the one 2 or 3 weeks ago when President Trump said that there was political bias at Google CNN called that a conspiracy theory just 2-3 weeks ago. And yesterday, in case you didn't notice, there was a full one-hour video released of some kind of conference or seminar hosted by the leaders at Google, and it happened just a few days after the election of Donald Trump. And to a man, every single one of them, they got up in front of the employees and trashed the new president of the United States, talked about how miserable this was for the country, talked about how dreadful the next 4 years were going to be, proving everything that Donald Trump said a couple weeks ago. It's no wonder so many in America have lost faith in the mainstream media. A la pundit at Hot Air, he's not exactly a huge fan of Donald Trump. But he said yesterday, following this latest uproar over the Puerto Rican death toll, he said the only good thing you can say about it, that's the Trump tweet, that is, the only good thing you can say about it is that as Trump conspiracy theories go, this one's relatively plausible. The 3,000 figure is a guesstimate. It's a guesstimate based on a comparison of deaths on the island during a normal year, quote unquote, and deaths in the aftermath of the 1-2 punch of Irma and Maria that Puerto Rico sustained in 2017. It may well be that only a few dozen people died while the storm was raging, but many more died in the weeks, months that followed as the lack of water, electricity, and first responders left the old and sick vulnerable. So it's probably, as far as the exact figure is concerned, it's probably somewhere between 64 and 2,975. But who knows? And how are we going to arrive at the truth when everything these days is motivated by politics? Truth fails, as I said earlier this week, Isaiah 59. Truth fails. No one trusts anyone. One side thinks the other side's lying. And anytime someone comes forward to expose deceit, dishonesty, well, that's leaving yourself wide open to a lot of attacks. You're making yourself a prey, as I said earlier this week. Hot Air went on and said, one of the amazing details about the new death toll is that the media had paid relatively little attention to it just because there's too much other Trump-generated news on their radar every day. So George Washington University comes out, I remember when I first heard this report this week about 3,000 dying, I thought, is that right? I don't remember it being that high, but I just kind of moved on. There's other things to look at or consider. But the point he's making here at Hot Air is that when the study came out in August, when the study came out 3-4 weeks ago and said it's not 64, it's 2,975, it's not 64, it's at the level of a 9/11 attack, where were the major media members then? Where were they? Did you hear any reporting in August? You only hear about it if it can be used as a cudgel to pound the president. And so that's what we're seeing. Hot Air says, for any other administration, an upward revision to deaths after a hurricane from 50 or so people to a number reminiscent of 9/11 would have been a story that raged for weeks. It's a good point. For any other administration besides this one, to go from 50 to 3,000, well, that would have been a story that raged on for weeks. As it happens, the major media, they barely batted an eye until President Trump called it into question yesterday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. When we come back, we'll analyze this latest by Victor Davis Hanson, the demonization of Devin Nunes, and how it serves as a window into our times. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. The developed nations have made awesome progress. They have produced a highly mechanized world, providing every luxury, modern convenience, and means of pleasure. Yet they are cursed with crime, violence, injustice, sickness and disease, broken homes and families. At the same time, more than one half the world is living in illiteracy, abject poverty, filth and squalor. Violence and destruction are rapidly multiplying. Many ask, why, if God exists, does he allow so much violence and human suffering? To understand the reason behind this astonishing paradox, request a complimentary copy of Mystery of the Ages. We were born into this 20th century world as it is. We take it for granted, but we can't explain it. It's like viewing a movie at a point already near the end. We see what is occurring at that point, but not having seen it from the beginning and not knowing how events developed to the point of viewing, we simply cannot understand what we are seeing. Mystery of the Ages transports you back to the beginning of the movie, to the foundation of this present evil world. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Revelation chapter 12 and verse 12 says that Satan has deceived the whole world. He's deceived the world. And John 8, in that passage, Jesus said that he's the father of lies. And so what he hates more than anything else is being exposed. He hates exposure. He wants to erase true history. He, like my father says in the Ezekiel booklet, he wants to erase his own history. He doesn't want you to know about your history, his history, the history of the United States, the British Empire. This piece by Victor Davis Hanson, just talking about exposure here. He's writing about the demonization of Devin Nunes. Or Nunez, however you say it. I know I say it both ways, just depending on how I feel. But he says here, much of what we now know about the unethical and often illegal behavior of the FBI, CIA, National Security Agency, and Department of Justice emerged due to the efforts of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Its chairman, during its stunning disclosures, has been Representative Devin Nunes of California, who in turn has been constantly demonized for his efforts. I mean, here he is uncovering all of this evil, uncovering all of this deceit, uncovering actual conspiracies, uncovering entrapment, uncovering illegal spying. And he is the one who's being demonized. Hanson says, yet without the committee's digging, Americans would not have known that Hillary Clinton's campaign and the Democratic National Committee paid for an unsubstantiated 2016 dossier on Donald Trump compiled by former British intelligence officer Christopher Steele. Steele, a foreigner. He's British, and he felt desperate to try to prevent a Trump presidency, and so he put together all of this salacious gossip into this dossier, and he tried to see if it could gain traction in the media, at the FBI. Then when that didn't work, over at the DOJ. And then through Bruce Orr, who was feeding it back to the FBI. All of this uncovered. thanks to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence, thanks to the efforts, the work of Devin Nunes, primarily. He's had help, of course. But it says here, prior to the committee's work, we would not know that the FBI and Justice Department used unverified information from the Steele dossier to obtain a warrant from the FISA court, allowing for the surveillance of former Trump campaign aide Carter Page. We wouldn't have known this. We wouldn't have known about the dossier. Without the committee's disclosures, Americans would not have had any idea that Bruce Orr, who once ranked fourth in the DOJ hierarchy, coordinated opposition research on Trump with Steele, the FBI, and Fusion GPS, or took his unethical step because his wife was working for Fusion GPS, a fact that was withheld on federal disclosure forms. We wouldn't have known any of that. Hansen says the Nunes-led committee also uncovered the names of prominent FBI and DOJ officials, including James Comey, Andrew McCabe, Rod Rosenstein, Sally Yates, who had approved FISA court warrant applications. They approved all of those FISA court applications based upon that discredited Steele dossier, which they didn't reveal to the court. Hansen says, finally, most dramatically, we learned that members of the Obama administration had unmasked the names of U.S. citizens swept up in government surveillance. Many of those names were illegally leaked to the press. This disclosure forced former U.N. Ambassador Samantha Power and former National Security Advisor Susan Rice to confess that they had requested most of the unmaskings. Rice had previously denied it before it was uncovered. They denied it. Before it was uncovered, the deep state denied the fact that Americans were being spied upon. But all of this uncovered, thanks to the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Hansen says no one so far has refuted the committee's findings, yet Chairman Nunes has become the subject of unprecedented venom, largely because of a spate of further embarrassing scandals at the FBI, DOJ, and CIA have resulted from his committee's findings. See, they keep finding more, which brings him under a withering attack. And Hansen talks about how that he's from California, Nunes, and so is Victor Davis Hansen, as I recall. But he says here in California's Central Valley, progressive reporters and political activists snoop around the farms of Nunes' relatives, eager to find any information that would be useful in discrediting his chairmanship. They have hunted down his wife, his grandmother, and his uncle in hopes of finding dirt. Reporters have even studied his family's genealogy, going back four generations, to accuse him of being too loyal to Portugal. This is reliable reporting today. I mean, these are sincere reporters, we're supposed to believe, just looking for the factual, candid truth, unvarnished, reputable reporting coming from the mainstream. In fact, their sole objective is to discredit him so that they can then discredit Donald Trump and protect the deep state and protect these high-ranking officials at the DOJ and FBI from being exposed. Hansen says the local newspaper, the Fresno Bee, suffers from chronic Devin derangement syndrome almost daily. The Bee runs anonymously sourced stories with headlines implying that Nunes could be treasonous, corrupt, or dishonest. That's what's happening in California's Central Valley, where Devin Nunes comes from. Then when you look at the way he's being demonized and attacked at the national level, reporters that will imply that he's foolish or dumb because he's a farmer. He's spooked by conspiracy theories. And then you think of the headline just from a few months ago. I guess this was back in May. This is from the Fresno Bee, and it was picked up by national news. The Fresno Bee, from his home area, A yacht, this is the title, this is the headline. A yacht, cocaine, prostitutes, winery partly owned by Nunez sued after fundraiser event. So here this fundraising event happens where evidently there's cocaine and prostitution, and Devin Nunez, who's probably in Washington, D.C. at the time, he's tied to this. He's tied together to this because he's one of 50 investors that helps to support this winery. Fresno B says the guests aboard the yacht that night described in her 2016 lawsuit as 25 of the Napa Valley-based winery top investors, all men, were openly using that what appeared to be cocaine and drawing straws for which sex worker to hire, according to the lawsuit. And then later on in the piece, its investors include his friend, Representative Devin Nunez. So that gains traction in the New York Times and elsewhere, Huffington Post, all of the popular left-wing sites, because we've got to discredit, we've got to demonize. He's exposing truth. So we've got to go after him. Victor Davis Hanson, he says here, prior to 2016, Nunez was praised by both conservatives and liberals for his warnings to the Obama administration about the dangers from Russian cyber attacks and meddling in U.S. affairs. He was praised by both sides before Donald Trump came along, before any of these investigations into the DOJ or the FBI. They love him, both sides of the aisle. Then Victor Davis Hanson concludes, the demonization of Nunez is a window into our times. We hunt for mythical Russian collusion while foreign collusion between Christopher Steele and his Russian sources is ignored. It's just ignored. Progressives who claim an affinity for the middle class demonize farmers as hicks. A supposedly noble press prints fake news and traces down someone's long-dead great-grandmother to suggest divided loyalties. That's mainstream media today. My father, remember in the Saving America article, he talked about how that none of this corruption would have come to light had Hillary Clinton won. He wrote this, God has blessed America like no other nation, and the devil wants to destroy America like no other nation. He wants to destroy our nation. He wants to destroy the United States. Both sides should wake up and look at this and consider this. My father says, this evil spiritual power is influencing the radical left. Most Republicans don't realize what they are dealing with. People who are absolutely committed to destroying the government of this land. They are committed to it. And so it doesn't take much. A tweet, an offhanded remark. And then you see the way that they demonize those who are getting close to the truth. It really does give us not just a window into American society, as Victor Davis Hanson titled his piece. It gives us a window into the strategy of Satan the devil, the god of this world, the accuser of our brethren. He's deceived the whole world. He's the prince of the power of the air. And Paul said we can't be ignorant of his devices. That's in 2 Corinthians. I mentioned that article from back in April. Remember the Nunez memo. My father said it exposes unseen threat to America. The memo, he said, in April, it's evidence of just how active the devil is, particularly in his efforts to destroy America. There are a lot of individuals in media circles, in political circles, there are a lot of them who are committed to bringing down the government of the United States. And God says, you know the truth. you know, you shall know the truth. Make sure that you know it, and don't be ignorant of Satan's devices. My father said in that Nunez article that a constitutional republic is not going to survive with this kind of thing happening. And he said further on, I'm not looking at this through the lens of politics. I look at what is happening from God's perspective. When you do that, you can discern when the devil is at work. Further on, he said, the radical left is lawless. They are sick. These people no longer deal in logic because they have been overwhelmed by the devil. If they say it, this is the way Satan works. He intimidates. Look, if we say this, if we conclude this, and they agree on both sides of the aisle, if scientists agree, if it's a university study, certainly if it's a prestigious university, then that is the truth. No questions asked. This is not up for debate. Adolf Hitler, he said, what you tell people in the mass in a receptive state of fanatic devotion will remain. Words, he said, received under a hypnotic influence are radical and impervious to every reasonable explanation. Just say it. Throw in some out of control emotion. Never mind if it's illogical. Never mind if it doesn't quite add up. 64, 64, 64, and then 2,975. Just like that. Just a few weeks ago, we learned this. And you can't call it into question. If you do, you're a liar. You're a conspiracy theorist. The devil hates and fears exposure most of all. This is what my father has said in one of his booklets. He is filled with hatred and rage. He's in a fitful rage, and he's trying to destroy God's truth, God's work. That's the way the devil reacts when he's being exposed. This is the time of year, right between the Feast of Trumpets and coming up quick to the Day of Atonement. Satan is about to be put away. He's about to be bound for 1,000 years. He knows how short his time is. He knows it. Revelation 12 brings that out. My father's made the point before that we better be aware. We better know just how short time is, because Satan is fighting. He is waging war. And he's behind this irrational, obsessive attempt to demonize any and everyone who would expose what actually is happening. And he's bent on destroying the United States, first and foremost. So there he is, working all of his devices, erasing his own history, lying to your face. Truth fails. Truth fails. Satan hates God's truth. He hates it, and he's working daily, laboring daily, to make you think, to make me think, that what God says in his word is not true. That's what he convinced Adam and Eve of in Genesis 3. What God said is not true. He lied to you. You decide. You decide what the truth is. You decide what's right and wrong. You shut God out of the equation. You kick God out of the garden. Another article we had from 2016 revolving around the two trees and Satan the devil. No one hates this subject more than Satan. Speaking of the two trees, why does he hate this knowledge so deeply? Because what happened in the Garden of Eden exposes the devil and his plan. It exposes him. God, if you see in that same chapter, Genesis 3, he cut man off from the tree of life. He sent him forth from the garden. And man ever since has been cut off from God's truth, cut off from the Holy Spirit, except for just a tiny few that God called out of this evil world to prepare them, to train them, to rule with Jesus Christ, to marry Jesus Christ. These are those who know that Satan the devil is the father of lies. And when he speaks a lie, he speaks of his own. He's a liar and he's the father of it all. He hates God's truth. He rejects God's truth. He's convinced a lot of people on this earth that God is a liar, that God's not telling you the truth. My father wrote a piece back in 2011. This was actually from Royal Vision, not the Trumpet. But he said in that article, God wants us to reveal Satan to this world. He wants us to reveal Satan to the Laodiceans. And Satan hates that more than anything. But this is our job. We're here to reveal the devil. Here he is in this rage of all rages. And we have to expose him, and he hates it. And that's going to make God's people more and more and more of a target. It's something to pray about. It's something to think about. It's something to prepare for. But he's actively engaged in this warfare that we're in. He's fighting against this work. He hates this work. He hates the fact that it's going forward. He's accusing. He's the author of slander and gossip, salacious dossiers. He's the one that inspires that sort of thing. He's the one that inspires this kind of behavior that we see so prevalent, so pervasive all over the earth. This hostility to God and to his law. This godless lifestyle. Satan, of course, Satan loves it when we swing into his camp, when we embrace the ways of lies and deceit. There's so many examples in this world. I mean, we go through a fair bit of them on this program from time to time. But just a few scriptures here before we conclude. Romans chapter 8, it says in verse 6, "For to be carnally minded is death, but to be spiritually minded is life and peace, because the carnal mind is enmity against God, for it is not subject to the law of God, neither indeed can be." That word enmity there in Romans 8, it means hostile. Hostile to God's law. Hostile to the truth. You look at that prophecy in 2 Thessalonians 2, where God sends strong delusion to see how much we love the truth, to see if we really love it like the Bereans did, to see if we'll really hold on to it. God said, I'll send strong delusion to test you, to test how much you love the truth. This morning in Epistles of Paul, we were going through just a wonderful study. Galatians 5, what a chapter. This chapter about how it says at the start, I mean, there's a little leaven that leavens the whole lump. That's all that it takes, which is why you've got to work to get it out. Get it out of the church, get it out of the home, get it out of the family. Paul said in Galatians 5, verse 13, "For brethren, you have been called unto liberty. Only use not liberty for an occasion to the flesh, but by love serve one another." Don't use the liberty that God gives to us. Liberty, of course, in God's view, is to be free from sin, not to be free to sin, to be freed from sin. That's the ultimate freedom. And God says, don't use that liberty as an occasion to the flesh, but love one another. Serve each other. For all the law is fulfilled in one word, even in this, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. You can sum up God's way of life. You can sum up the work of God with just this one word, the Greek word agape, the way of love. This I say then, verse 16, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. God's people, they have access to the tree of life, which symbolized the Spirit of God. It typified God's Holy Spirit. God says, walk in the Spirit. Walk in this way. God's not going to pull us, as I've been saying. We're led. We have to be led by the Spirit, Romans 8. We have to follow God. And we have to fight. For the flesh lusts against the Spirit, and the Spirit against the flesh. And these are contrary to one another, so that you cannot do the things that you would. This is a war, the war of the wills, it says in Romans 7. But we've got to be led by the Spirit. If we are, as Paul says in verse 18, we're not under the law or the curse of the law, the penalty for breaking it. There's life, there's faith, there's love. Well, Paul lists off the works of the flesh. What a contrast. Galatians 5, 19 through 21, all that were to come out of, fornication, uncleanness, wrath, strife, seditions, heresies, envyings, murders, drunkenness, revelings, and everything like it, Paul said. Come out of that. If we're engaged in those kinds of things, we're not going to inherit the kingdom of God, he says. But, and here's the other side, but the fruit of the Spirit, the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. There's a law against those other things. Hatred, adultery, fornication, and the like. But this is what's described here in verses 22 through 23. This is the character of God. This is God's lifestyle. This is his nature. This is his way. These are his characteristics. And Paul says, walk in this way. Walk in the Spirit. Walk in the Spirit of godly love. It says in Romans 5 that God's love is shed abroad in our hearts by the Spirit. John 15 and 16, Jesus said, if the Spirit's in you, then you can be full of joy. You can be full of peace. It mentions goodness there as well. It says in Romans 2, 4, that the goodness of God leads you to repentance. All of these fruits, they come from God because they're fruits of the Spirit. And the fruit, like I was saying to the students this morning, I mean, that's the visible, colorful in some cases, edible. That's the edible part of the tree. That's the usable part of the tree. That's what God uses. That's what he can use. And we understand the analogy because that's the part of the tree that we consume. We eat the apple, not the branch or the leaves or the trunk. We're interested in the fruit. And that's what God is interested in. This is what we're here to produce. This is what we're here to grow in. And you don't see this in the world today. You don't see it in politics. You don't see it in the media. You see the opposite. You see lies. You see dishonesty. You don't see reputable coverage. You see disreputable reporting. God has called us to live in the Spirit. It says in verse 25, if we live in the Spirit, let us also walk in the Spirit. Before that, he says, crucify the flesh with its affections and lusts. Crucify those things, kill those things off, come out of those things, and live in the Spirit. Live in it, God says, and also walk in it. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're putting the finishing touches on yet another week of broadcasting here on KPCG and KPCG.fm online. Thank you for joining us today. Thank you for joining us all week. And we'll see you next week.